welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, there's some places in the state of Wisconsin where gas is now $5.
Yeah.
And climbing. It, you know, I know Biden is meeting with
Saudi Arabia to
get them to pump more gas.
We were talking about deals with the devil before.
To get them to pump more gas, more oil.
Yeah.
Sandy, even if that happens, there is no magic pill. This is not.
Well, there, you know, like I said, though, actually, this is the way it feels when you're dealing with commodities. But price goes up, and happily with commodities, the price goes down almost as rapidly as it goes up. So, you know, when things switch, the problem with what we've got going on with oil is this temporary friction where it's hard to. If you picture the market, the world market for oil, as if it were the ocean. And people are withdrawing water from the ocean, and it's and the amount of volume of water that's withdrawn from the ocean every year is the same. Then it doesn't have much effect whether the water is withdrawn from the United States or whether it's taken out of the ocean from Africa. It doesn't make much difference.
Right.
But if the ocean has got compartments in it, you know, if the U.S. has a compartment that it's withdrawing water from,
it'll soon be empty.
It could be empty,
right.
Okay? And so what happens in the world market is ultimately the infrastructure for distributing oil redistributes the oil so it's more like one big ocean again, and the compartments get reconnected in a way that takes care of that. So when China and India and these other people start buying oil from Russia in spite of America's admonitions not to, and that oil gets consumed, those places will stop consuming the oil they were consuming and they'll start consuming Russian oil. Like I'm saying, it's a finite volume of oil, and it's more or less, and it's a finite volume of oil demand. It's just a question of how those compartments are set up and whether they're reconnected or interconnected. So the marketplace, it'll take a year maybe or a year and a half, but it'll resolve. Now, I know you're going to look at me and say, yeah,
what do Tom, Dick, and Mary do about oil? Hey, huh? Sam, are you is that good news to hear it's going to take a year or a year and a half for the gas prices to come down?
I can afford a year and a half. No. I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry.
Well, no, but here's the other thing that's going to happen, and it's interesting. There was on the news this morning.
Sandy, you're my guy, man.
No, but
a year,
I was
year and a half.
No, but it's not going to take a year and a half because there's another bitter pill, okay, which is recession. Okay, so when the demand drops for oil and gas because of recession, the price will go down too. Now, you can say, well, if all we're looking at is the price of gasoline, that's good news. But if what we're saying is that the pill that's going to make the price of gasoline go down is a recession, that could be bad news.
Well, yeah, because they'll be suffering in other sectors.
Exactly. And so it turns out that recession is going to be a cure for a bunch of things. I was listening to a sophisticated podcast talking about how are we going to cure the shortage that are created by the supply chain, okay, the parts, all of the shortages in parts. And one of the answers was, well, there's a recession, and as this recession deepens, the demand for all these parts will drop, and we'll suddenly have enough silicon chips, for instance, because the demand for them has fallen. Well, that's a bitter pill, right? That's like saying death can cure disease.
You know, Sandy, you talk about my wife went to look for a car, and there were no cars to be had.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's still amazing to me, right? I mean, we know it's been, I don't know if that's ever been before, but that's not going to get fixed overnight either.
Well, not only is it not going to get fixed, but it's a little bit like the COVID pandemic. It might it might well be that it's going to change the whole way that automobiles are sold, because in the past, automobile dealers would spend a lot of money and have a lot of working capital that they would devote to having lots of cars on the lot, and then they would sit nervously all year hoping that they sold all those cars on the lot. Now the only way you can buy a car in most car dealerships is to order it and to wait the 6 weeks or 8 weeks that it might take for the car to be made and sent and delivered to you. But those dealers are still making a good markup. In fact, the fact that they're in short supply means that they aren't going to negotiate with you over the price. You're going to pay the full sticker price to order that car. And they aren't going to have to devote any working capital. They're not going to stay up at night wondering whether they're going to sell their inventory. They're not going to have much inventory. It's kind of the model that Amazon has going for it, which is basically that they're selling, that they're a throughput portal to sell things. And everyone knows that automobile dealers make most of their money in their service departments anyway. They don't make money from selling new cars. They make money from selling used cars and their service departments. And now the public is maybe going to get used to this. So I'm just telling you, get used to the notion that you're not going to maybe go to the car dealer, look at 10 different cars, ask your wife which color she likes best, and then buy it.
You're saying this may be a permanent change.
Yeah, it's going to be permanent. I think it will be permanent because I think it's going to make a lot of economic sense. It's going to be a reduction in fixed costs for car dealerships without and really sacrificing profit, and it'll be a reduction in risk as well for them. And so, yeah, my prediction, Tesla started this model. You know, you don't buy Teslas from a car dealer. You order your Tesla over the internet, and you wait whatever the weeks or months are that are the waiting time to get that car. And the other thing is, when you order a car, you do get it exactly as you want it. So all you have to do is sit with your wife and ask her what color she wants, and she'll get it.
You know, Sandy, I remember when the car dealerships, like you said, were full of vehicles.
Yeah.
And I remember they would have to pay interest at the end of the month on all the vehicles.
Every car, absolutely.
Yeah, that they had on the lot.
Yeah. It was called floor plan. It's called floor plan financing.
And so it's better for a new car dealer now.
Yeah.
He stands a better chance of making a long-standing profit than he does that some guy's going to come in off the street.
Yeah, it's just a question of the public getting trained or retrained to be accepting of the notion that, and you know what happens if you really need a car, well, then you'll buy a used car, which incidentally they make more money on used cars than they do on new cars. Used cars don't have an MSRP that gives you a lot of data about what the costs were to the dealer. You don't know what the dealer paid for that used car that he's selling to you.
So my wife is not really happy about having to order and wait. People have gotten used to in this country now.
Yeah, instant gratification.
Right? You know, hey, I see the car on the lot. Let's go get it.
Yeah.
That is all of these changes, Sandy, coming in our country, and all at once. It's nothing marginal about these things. They're just all at once, the world is changing
us. Yeah, and of course, you know, working at home changes the amount that you commute in a car. I mean, there's probably a lot happening to the car industry right now that's below the surface, and that maybe the demand for new vehicles is going to decline some too, because if you don't have to get in your car every day and drive to work,
yeah,
maybe that's going to change the extent to which you want or need a new car.
So there'll come a point in history when they'll point back to these times and see that, you know, business is a different reality now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, right now there's a lot of contest going on about places trying to bring people back to the office to work. Elon Musk just announced that you couldn't work at Tesla anymore if you didn't start coming to work and spend 40 hours a week in the office. And people will quit if they don't like their job enough. And in today's climate, with plenty of jobs available, apparently, it's going to give people the opportunity to make choices like that.
Let's do this. Let's go to the phone line. Sam, who do we have up?
Bill from Oconomowoc.
Hey, Bill, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Just fine. You guys do a wonderful job. Say, on car buying, my wife just bought a new car, but I'm sure your listeners know. I know you guys know. The only way to shut up.
I don't know. Looks
and like... You can get. Well, let me finish. You can get such a variety from new to used, whatever you want. You know they got factory warranties. You get the color. You get that. My wife didn't shop online. She went to the dealership, and she knew what she wanted, and they happened to have it. But it's more consumer-friendly online, I believe, because when I first started doing this, which was a number of years ago, they didn't want to honor what was online till I quoted them the VIN number. Now, I don't think they do it that way. But the consumer is, you know, miles ahead, just staying home and figuring out what you want. And I think you can find it. I really think you can find it. The other thing you were talking about, and I just shared with a bunch of other people, this work at home. Back in the early 2000s, I was allowed to work from home after retirement. I actually worked for the Michaels Corporation, but I worked out of my house. That is just so user-friendly to the employees, I think, and just makes almost too much sense. It's something that I would call a progressive way of looking at things. Do you think?
Well, I do think a bunch of businesses found that they were, in fact, missing a beat in terms of the efficiency of the output that they were getting from their workers, even though the workers were working at home. And I think lots of organizations have set up processes in which they can try to get the best of both worlds. I think many working organizations have 3 days a week in the office kinds of ongoing routines where people can choose to spend 2 days, and maybe it's always Monday and Friday that they spend at home, and the middle of the week they spend in the office. And many companies, many in the service industry, found themselves highly productive during the work at home period. So, and those are places that are looking at the output from their workers more than they're looking at the hours spent by the workers.
But then, Sandy, why would they need all of the real estate? Overhead.
Well, they don't. And in fact, the whole real estate industry is trying to figure out how to react to this new process. Buildings that are being built today have different configurations for the office space and large offices. Many industries, even down to the accounting industry, the legal industry, are trying to figure out how they will reshape their offices and how they will reduce the square footage per employee that they have to rent. But there's no question that the average square footage per employee that's required for commercial office space now has been reduced materially.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call. Wish I had more time. We've got to go to a break. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.